I was training with Jace, but then he had to go back to the Institute for some kind of Clave business. I'm headed back to Luke's now. A car honked loudly in the background. Look, do you want to stay with us? You could sleep on Luke's couch. Simon hesitated. He had good memories of Luke's. In all the years he'd known Clary, Luke had lived in the same ratty but pleasant old row house over the bookstore. Clary had a key, and she and Simon had whiled away a lot of pleasant hours there, reading books they'd borrowed from the store downstairs or watching old movies on the TV. Things were different now, though. Maybe my mom could talk to your mom, Clary said, sounding worried by his silence. Make her understand. Make her understand that I'm a vampire? Clary, I think she does understand that, in a weird kind of way. That doesn't mean she's going to accept it or ever be okay with it. Well, you can't just keep making her forget, either, Simon, Clary said. It's not going to work forever. Why not? He knew he was being unreasonable. But lying on the hard floor, surrounded by the smell of gasoline and the whisper of spiders spinning their webs in the corners of the garage, feeling lonelier than he ever had, reasonable seemed very far away. Because then your whole relationship with her is a lie. You can't never go home. So what? Simon interrupted harshly. That's part of the curse, isn't it? A fugitive and a wanderer shalt thou be? Despite the traffic noises and the sound of chatter in the background, he could hear Clary's sudden indrawn breath. You think I should tell her about that too? He said. How you put the mark of Cain on me? How I'm basically a walking curse? You think she's going to want that in her house? The background sounds quieted. Clary must have ducked into a doorway. He could hear her struggling to hold back tears as she said, Simon, I'm sorry. You know I'm sorry. It's not your fault. He suddenly felt bone-tired. That's right, terrify your mother and then make your best friend cry. A banner day for you, Simon. Look, obviously I shouldn't be around people right now. I'm just going to stay here, and I'll crash with Eric when he gets home. She made a snuffling, laughing through tears sound. What, doesn't Eric count as people? I'll get back to you on that later, he said, and hesitated. I'll call you tomorrow, all right? You'll see me tomorrow. You promised to come to that dress fitting with me, remember? Whoa, he said. I must really love you. I know, she said. I love you too. Simon clicked off the phone and lay back, holding it against his chest. It was funny, he thought. Now he could say, I love you, to Clary, when for years he'd struggled to say those words and had not been able to get them out of his mouth. Now that he no longer meant them the same way, it was easy. Sometimes he did wonder what would have happened if there had never been a Jace Wayland. If Clary had never found out she was a shadow hunter. But he pushed that thought away. Pointless. Don't go down that road. You couldn't change the past, you could only go forward. Not that he had any idea of what forward entailed. He couldn't stay in Eric's garage forever. Even in his current mood, he had to admit it was a miserable place to stay. He wasn't cold, he no longer felt cold or heat in any real way, but the floor was hard, and he was having trouble sleeping. He wished he could dull his senses. The loud noise of traffic outside was keeping him from resting, as was the unpleasant stench of gasoline. But it was the gnawing worry about what to do next that was the worst. He'd thrown away most of his blood supply and stashed the rest in his knapsack. He had about enough for a few more days, and then he'd be in trouble. Eric, wherever he was certainly let Simon stay in the house if he wanted, but that might result in Eric's parents calling Simon's mom. And since she thought he was on a school field trip, that would do him no good at all. Days, he thought. That was the amount of time he had. Before he ran out of blood, before his mother started to wonder where he was and called the school looking for him, before she started to remember, he was a vampire now. He was supposed to have eternity. But what he had was days. He had been so careful, tried so hard for what he thought of as a normal life. School, friends, his own house, his own bedroom. It had been strange, but it was what life was. Other options seemed so bleak and lonely that they didn't bear thinking about. And yet Camille's voice rang in his head.
What about in 10 years, when you were supposed to be 26? In 20 years, 30,
Do you think no one will notice that as they age and change, you do not? The situation he had created for himself, had carved so carefully in the shape of his old life, had never been permanent, he thought now, with a sinking in his chest. It never could have been. He'd been clinging to shadows and memories. He thought again of Camille, of her offer. It sounded better now than it had before. An offer of community, even if it wasn't the community he wanted. He had only about 3 more days before she'd come looking for his answer. And what would he tell her when she did? He thought he'd knew, but now he wasn't so sure. A grinding noise interrupted his reverie. The garage door was ratcheting upward, bright lights spearing into the dark interior of the space. Simon sat up, his whole body suddenly on the alert.
Eric?
No, it's me, Kyle.
Kyle?
Simon said blankly, before he remembered. The guy that agreed to take on as lead singer. Simon almost flopped back down onto the ground again.
Oh, right. None of the other guys are here right now, so if you were hoping to practice...
It's cool. That's not why I came. Kyle stepped into the garage, blinking in the darkness, his hands in the back pockets of his jeans. You're our, what's his name? The bassist, right? Simon got to his feet, brushing garage floor dust off his clothes.
I'm Simon.
Kyle glanced around, a perplexed furrow between his brows.
I left my keys here yesterday, I think. I've been looking for them everywhere. Oh, there they are.
He ducked behind the drum set and emerged a second later, rattling a set of keys triumphantly in his hand. He looked much the same as he had the day before. He had a blue t-shirt on today, under a leather jacket, and a gold Saints medal sparkled around his neck. His dark hair was messier than ever.
So,
Kyle said, leaning against one of the speakers,
were you, like, sleeping here, on the floor?
Simon nodded.
Got thrown out of my house.
It wasn't precisely true, but it was all he felt like saying. Kyle nodded sympathetically.
Mom found your weed stash, huh? That sucks.
No. No weed stash, Simon shrugged.
We had a difference of opinion about my lifestyle. So she found out about your 2 girlfriends.
Kyle grinned. He was good looking, and Simon had to admit, but unlike Jace, who seemed to know exactly how good looking he was, Kyle seemed like someone who probably hadn't brushed his hair in weeks. There was an open, friendly puppyishness about him that was appealing, though.
Yeah, Kirk told me about it. Good for you, man.
Simon shook his head.
It wasn't that.
There was a short silence between them, then.
I don't live at home either, Kyle said. I left a couple years ago.
He hugged his arms around himself, hanging his head down. His voice was low.
I haven't talked to my parents since then. I mean, I'm doing all right on my own, but I get it.
Your tattoos, Simon said, touching his own arms lightly.
What do they mean?
Kyle stretched his arms out.
Shanti, 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 he said. They're mantras from the Upanishads, Sanskrit. Prayers for peace.
Normally Simon would have thought that getting yourself tattooed in Sanskrit was kind of pretentious. But right now he didn't.
Shalom, he said.
Kyle blinked at him.
What? Means peace, said Simon. In Hebrew. I was just thinking the words sounded sort of alike.
Kyle gave him a long look. He seemed to be deliberating. Finally he said,
this is going to sound sort of crazy. Oh, I don't know. My definition of crazy has become pretty flexible in the past few months. But I have an apartment in Alphabet City, and my roommate just moved out. It's a 2-bedroom, so you could crash in this space. There's a bed in there and everything.
Simon hesitated. On the one hand, he didn't know Kyle at all, and moving into the apartment of a total stranger seemed like a stupid move of epic proportions. Kyle could turn out to be a serial killer despite his peace tattoos. On the other hand, he didn't know Kyle at all, which meant no one would come looking for him there. And what did it matter if Kyle did turn out to be a serial killer? He thought bitterly. It would turn out worse for Kyle than it would for him, just like it had for the mugger last night.
You know, he said, I think I'll take you up on that, if it's okay.
Carl nodded.
My truck's just outside if you want to ride into the city with me.
Simon bent to grab his duffel bag and straightened with it slung over his shoulder. He slid his phone into his pocket and spread his hands wide, indicating his readiness.
Let's go.
Chapter 5. Hell Calls Hell. Carl's apartment turned out to be a pleasant surprise. Simon expected a filthy walk-up in an Avenue D tenement with roaches crawling on the walls and a bed made out of mattress foam and milk crates. In reality, it was a clean two-bedroom with a small living area, a ton of bookshelves, and lots of photos on the walls of famous surfing spots. Admittedly, Kyle seemed to be growing marijuana plants on the fire escape, but you couldn't have everything. Simon's room was basically an empty box. Whoever had lived there before had left nothing behind but a futon mattress. It had bare walls, bare floors, and a single window through which Simon could see the neon sign of the Chinese restaurant across the street.
You like it?
Kyle inquired, hovering in the doorway, his hazel eyes open and friendly.
It's great,
Simon replied honestly.
Exactly what I needed.
The most expensive item in the apartment was the flat-screen TV in the living room. They threw themselves down on the futon couch and watched bad TV as the sunlight dimmed outside. Kyle was cool, Simon decided. He didn't poke, didn't pry, didn't ask questions. He didn't seem to want anything in exchange for the room except for Simon to pitch in grocery money. He was just a friendly guy. Simon wondered if he'd forgotten what ordinary human beings were like. After Carl headed out to work an evening shift, Simon went into his room, collapsed on the mattress, and listened to the traffic going by on Avenue B. He had been haunted by thoughts of his mother's face since he'd left, the way she looked at him with loathing and fear, as if he were an intruder in her house. Even if he didn't need to breathe, the thought of it still constricted his chest. But now, when he was a kid, he'd always liked traveling, because being in a new place meant being away from all his problems. Even here, just a river away from Brooklyn, the memories that had been eating at him like acid, the mugger's death, his mother's reaction to the truth of what he was, seemed blurred and distant. Maybe that was the secret, he thought. Keep moving, like a shark. Go to where no one could find you. A fugitive and a wanderer shall thou be in the earth. But that only worked if there was no one you cared about leaving behind. He slept fitfully all night. His natural urge was to sleep during the day, despite his daylight powers, and he fought off the restlessness and dreams before waking up late with the sun streaming in through the window. After throwing on clean clothes from his knapsack, he left the bedroom to find Kyle in the kitchen, frying bacon and eggs in a Teflon pan.
Hey, roommate,
Kyle greeted him cheerfully.
Want some breakfast?
The sight of food made Simon feel vaguely sick to his stomach.
No, thanks. I'll take some coffee, though.
He perched himself on one of the slightly lopsided bar stools. Carl pushed a chipped mug across the counter toward him.
Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, bro, even if it's already noon.
Simon put his hands around the mug, feeling the heat seep into his cold skin. He cast about for the topic of conversation, one that wasn't how little he ate.
So I never asked you yesterday, what do you do for a living?
Carl picked a piece of bacon out of the pan and bit into it. Simon noticed that the gold medal at his throat had a pattern of leaves on it, and the words, Beati Bellicosi. Beati, Simon knew, was a word that had something to do with saints. Carl must be Catholic.
Bike messenger, he said, chewing. It's awesome. I get to ride around the city, seeing everything, talking to everyone. Way better than high school. You dropped out? Got my GED senior year. I prefer the school of life.
Simon would have thought Kyle sounded ridiculous if it weren't for the fact he said,
school of life,
the way he said everything else, with total sincerity.
What about you? Any plans?
Oh, you know, wander the earth, causing death and destruction to innocent people, maybe drink some blood, live forever, but never have any fun, the usual, he thought.
I'm kind of winging it at the moment.
You mean you don't want to be a musician? Kyle asked.
To Simon's relief, his phone rang before he had to answer that. He fished it out of his pocket and looked at the screen. It was Maya.
Hey,
he greeted her.
What's up? Are you going to be at that dress fitting with Clary this afternoon?
She asked, her voice crackling down the line. She was probably calling from packet quarters in Chinatown where the reception wasn't great.
She told me she was making you go to keep her company. What? Oh, right. Yeah, I'll be there.
Clary had demanded that Simon accompany her to her bridesmaid's dress fitting so afterward they could shop for comics and she could feel, in her words, like less of a frilled up girly girl.
Well, I'm going to come to them. I have to give Luke a message from the pack, and besides, I feel like I haven't seen you in ages.
I know. I'm really sorry.
It's fine,
she said lightly.
But you're going to have to let me know what you're wearing to the wedding eventually, because otherwise we'll clash.
She hung up, leaving Simon staring at the phone. Clary had been right. The wedding was D-Day, and he was woefully unprepared for the battle.
One of your girlfriends?
Kyle asked curiously.
Was that red-headed chick at the garage one of them? Because she was cute. No, that was Clary. She's my best friend.
Simon pocketed his phone.
And she has a boyfriend, like, really, really, really has a boyfriend. The nuclear bomb of boyfriends, trust me on this one.
Kyle grinned.
I was just asking.
He dumped the bacon pan, now empty, into the sink.
So, your two girls, what are they like? They're very, very different.
In some ways, Simon thought they were opposites. Maya was calm and grounded. Isabel lived at a high pitch of excitement. Maya was a steady light in the darkness. Isabel a burning star, spinning through the void.
I mean, they're both great, beautiful and smart.
And they don't know about each other?
Kyle leaned against the counter.
Like at all?
Simon found himself explaining how when he'd come back from Idris, though he didn't mention the place by name, they both started calling him, wanting to hang out. And because he liked them both, he went. And somehow, it had snowballed. And here he was, not wanting to hurt either of them, and not knowing how to go on either.
Well, if you ask me,
Kyle said, turning to dump his remaining coffee out in the sink,
you ought to pick one of them and quit dogging around, I'm just saying.
Since his back was to Simon, Simon couldn't see his face, and for a moment he wondered if Kyle was actually angry. His voice sounded uncharacteristically stiff, but when Kyle turned around, his expression was as open and as friendly as ever. Simon decided he must have imagined it.
I know, he said. You're right.
He glanced back toward the bedroom.
Look, are you sure it's okay, me staying here? I can clear out whenever.
It's fine. You stay here as long as you need.
Kyle opened a kitchen drawer and scrabbled around until he found what he was looking for. A set of spare keys on a rubber band ring.
There's a set for you. You're totally welcome here, okay? I gotta go to work, but you can hang around if you want, play Halo or whatever. Will you be here when I get back?
Simon shrugged.
Probably not. I have a dress fitting to get to at 3.
Cool, said Kyle, slinging a messenger bag over his shoulder and heading toward the door. Get him to make something in red. It's totally your color.
So,
Clary said, stepping out of the dressing room, what do you think? She did an experimental twirl. Simon balanced on one of Karen's bridal shop's uncomfortable white chairs, shifted position, winced, and said,
you look nice.
She looked better than nice. Clary was her mother's only bridesmaid, so she'd been allowed to pick out whatever dress she wanted. She'd selected a very simple, coppery silk with narrow straps that flattered a small frame. Her only jewelry was the Morganstone ring, worn on a chain around her neck. The very plain silver chain brought out the shape of her collarbones and the curve of her throat. Not that many months ago, seeing Clary dressed up for a wedding would have conjured up in Simon a mix of feelings. Dark despair, she would never love him, and high excitement, or maybe she would, if he could get up the nerve to tell her how he felt. Now it just made him feel a little wistful.
Nice, echoed Clary. Is that it? Sheesh.
She turned to Maya. What do you think? Maya had given up on the uncomfortable chairs and was sitting on the floor, her back against the wall that was decorated with tiaras and long gauzy veils. She had Simon's DS balanced on one of her knees, and seemed to be at least partly absorbed in playing Grand Theft Auto.
Don't ask me, she said. I hate dresses. I'd wear jeans to the wedding if I could.
This was true. Simon rarely saw Maya out of jeans and t-shirts. In that way, she was the opposite of Isabel, who wore dresses and heels at even the most inappropriate times. Though since he'd once seen her dispatch a vermis demon with a stiletto heel of a boot, he was less inclined to worry about it. The shop bell tinkled, and Jocelyn came in, followed by Luke. Both were holding steaming cups of coffee, and Jocelyn was looking at Luke, her cheeks flushed and eyes shining. Simon remembered what Clary had said about them being disgustingly in love. He didn't find it disgusting himself, though that was probably because they weren't his parents. They both seemed so happy, and he thought it was actually rather nice. Jocelyn's eyes widened when she saw Clary.
Honey, you look gorgeous.
Yeah, you have to say that. You're my mother, Clary said, but she grinned anyway.
Hey, is that coffee black by any chance?
Yeah, consider it a sorry we're late gift, Luke said, handing her the cup. We got held off some catering issue or the other.
He nodded towards Simon and Maya.
Hey, guys.
Maya inclined her head. Luke was the head of the local wolf pack, of which Maya was a member. Though he'd broken her of the habit of calling him master or sir, she'd remained respectful in his presence.
I brought you a message from the pack, she said, sitting down her game console. They have questions about the party at the Ironworks.
As Maya and Luke fell into conversation about the party the wolf pack was throwing in honor of their alpha wolf's marriage, the owner of the bridal shop, a tall woman who had been reading magazines behind the counter while the teenagers chatted, realized that the people who were actually going to pay for the dresses had just arrived and hurried forward to greet them.
I just got your dress back. It looks marvelous,
she gushed, taking Clary's mother by the arm and steering her toward the back of the store. Come and try it on. As Luke started after them, she pointed a threatening finger at him.
You stay here.
Luke, watching his fiancée disappear through a set of white swinging doors painted with wedding bells, looked puzzled.
Mundanes think you're not supposed to see the bride in her wedding dress before the ceremony, Clary reminded him. It's bad luck. She probably thinks it's weird you came to the fitting.
But Jocelyn wanted my opinion.
Luke broke off and shook his head.
Ah, well, mundane customs are so peculiar.
He threw himself down in a chair and winced as one of the carved rosettes poked into his back.
Ouch! What about Shadowhunter weddings?
Meyer inquired, curious.
Do they have their own customs?
They do, Luke said slowly. But this isn't going to be a classic Shadowhunter ceremony. Those specifically don't address any situation in which one of the participants is not a Shadowhunter.
Really?
Maya looked shocked.
I didn't know that.
Part of a Shadowhunter marriage ceremony involves tracing permanent runes on the bodies of the participants, said Luke.
His voice was calm, but his eyes looked sad.
Runes of love and commitment. But, of course, non-Shadowhunters can't bear the angel's runes, so Jocelyn and I will be exchanging rings instead.
That sucks, Maya pronounced.
At that, Luke smiled.
Not really. Marrying Jocelyn is all I ever wanted, and I'm not that bothered about the particulars. Besides, things are changing. The new council members have made a lot of headway towards convincing the Clave to tolerate this sort of...
Clary!
It was Jocelyn, calling from the back of the store.
Can you come here for a second?
Coming,
Clary called, bolting down the last of her coffee.
Uh-oh, sounds like a dress emergency.
Well, good luck with that. Maya got to her feet and dropped the DS back in Simon's lap before bending to kiss him on the cheek.
I have to go. I'm meeting some friends at the Hunter's Moon.
She smelled pleasantly of vanilla. Under that, as always, Simon could smell the salt scent of blood, mixed with a sharp, lemony tang that was peculiar to werewolves. Every downworlder's blood smelled different. Fairies smelled like dead flowers, warlocks like burnt matches, and other vampires like metal. Clary had once asked him what Shadowhunters smell like.
Sunlight, he said. See you later, baby.
Maya straightened up, ruffled Simon's hair once, and departed. As the door closed behind her, Clary fixed him with a piercing glare.
You must work out your love life by next Saturday, she said.
I mean it, Simon. If you don't tell them, I will. Luke looked bewildered.
Tell her what?
Clary shook her head at Simon.
You're on thin ice, Lewis.
With which pronouncement she flounced away, holding up her silk skirts as she went. Simon was amused to note that underneath them she was wearing green sneakers.
Clearly, said Luke, something is going on that I don't know about.
Simon looked over at him.
Sometimes I think that's the motto of my life.
Luke raised his eyebrows.
Has something happened?
Simon hesitated. He certainly couldn't tell Luke about his love life. Luke and Maya were in the same pack, and werewolf packs were more loyal than street gangs. It would put Luke in a very awkward position. It was true, though, that Luke was also a resource. As the leader of the Manhattan Wolf Pack, he had access to all sorts of information and was well-versed in downworlder politics.
Have you ever heard of a vampire named Camille?
Luke made a low whistling sound.
I know who she is. I'm surprised you do. Well, she's the head of the New York Vampire Clan. I do know something about them,
Simon said a little stiffly.
I didn't realize you did. I thought you wanted to live like a human as much as you could.
There was no judgment in Luke's voice, only curiosity.
Now, by the time I took over the downtown pack from the previous pack leader, she had put Raphael in charge. I don't think anyone knew where she'd gone exactly, but she is something of a legend.
An extraordinarily old vampire, from everything I understand. Famously cruel and cunning. She could give the fair folk a run for their money.
Have you seen her?
Luke shook his head.
Don't think I have, no.
Why the curiosity?
Raphael mentioned her,
Simon said vaguely. Luke's forehead creased. You seen Raphael lately? Before Simon could answer, the bell shop sounded again, and to Simon's surprise, Jace came in. Clary hadn't mentioned he was coming. In point of fact, he realized Clary hadn't mentioned Jace much lately at all. Jace looked from Luke to Simon. He looked as if he were mildly surprised to see Simon and Luke there, although it was hard to tell. Though Simon imagined that Jace ran the gamut of facial expressions when he was alone with Clary, his default one around other people was a fierce sort of blankness.
He looks, Simon had once said to Isabel, like he's thinking about something deep and meaningful, but if you ask him what it is, he'll punch you in the face.
So don't ask him, Isabel had said, as if she thought Simon was being ridiculous. No one says you two need to be friends.
Is Clary here?
Jace asked, shutting the door behind him. He looked tired. There were shadows under his eyes, and he didn't seem to have bothered to put on a jacket despite the fact the autumn wind was brisk. Though cold could no longer affect Simon much, looking at Jace in just jeans and a thermal shirt made him feel chilly.
She's helping Jocelyn, explained Luke, but you're welcome to wait here with us.
Jace looked around uneasily at the walls hung with veils, fans, tiaras, and seed-pearl-encrusted trains.
Everything is so white.
Of course it's white, said Simon. It's a wedding.
White for shadow hunters is the color of funerals, Luke explained. But for mundanes, Jace, it's the color of weddings. Brides wear white to symbolize their purity.
I thought Jocelyn said the dress wasn't white, Simon said.
Well, said Jace. I suppose that ship has sailed.
Luke choked on his coffee. Before he could say or do anything, Clary walked back into the room. Her hair was up now, in sparkling pins, with a few curls hanging loose.
I don't know, she was saying as she came closer to them. Karen got her hands on me and did my hair, but I'm not sure about the sparkles.
She broke off as she saw Jace. It was clear from her expression that she hadn't been expecting him either. Her lips parted in surprise, but she said nothing. Jace, in his turn, was staring at her, and for once in his life, Simon could read Jace's expression like a book. It was as if everything else in the world had fallen away for Jace but himself and Clary, and he was looking at her with an unconcealed yearning and desire that made Simon feel awkward, as if he had somehow walked in on a private moment. Jace cleared his throat.
You look beautiful.
Jace.
Clary looked more puzzled than anything else. Is everything all right? I thought you said you couldn't come because of the conclave meeting.
That's right, Luke said. I heard about the shadow hunter body in the park. Is there any news?
Jace shook his head, still looking at Clary.
No. He's not one of the New York conclave members. But beyond that, he hasn't been identified. Neither of the bodies have. The Silent Brothers are looking at them now.
That's good. The brothers will figure out who they are, said Luke. Jace said nothing. He was still looking at Clary, and it was the oddest sort of look. Simon thought, the sort of look you might give someone you loved but could never, ever have. He imagined Jace had felt like that about Clary once before, but now?
Jace?
Clary said, and took a step toward him. He tore his gaze away from him.